welcome to an episode of Horror Movie Night. Now, unfortunately, there's going to be no Adam on this episode. He got called into work, but though he didn't write an intro to this episode, he did write his thoughts on this movie that we're about to discuss, and I think that I should start with these. This movie is the pinky that I let a girl put in my butt. But that's it. Only the pinky. That's as much as I'm okay with. So I'm only okay with about 15% of this movie. But it tried to shove its whole fist up my ass. And I'm not okay with that. Get fucked, Scott. We're talking about Stung, as selected by Scott from 2015.
Man, I thought that he was on the right track with talking about butt stuff, but then took a left turn into fuck you, Scott. So I guess we're not friends anymore, Adam. We're broken up until next week.
So you picked this movie. You've been talking about this movie forever.
Since 2015.
Yeah. You once believed that this movie starred
David Carradine,
but instead it stars Lance Hendrickson.
Lance Hendrickson? Is he related to Jimi Hendrickson?
Okay.
It's Lance Hendrickson.
Yeah, but it's Jimi Hendrix, so I don't know where you were going with your joke either.
Listen, I'm pretty sure that at least one person, Rudy, is going to back up my joke this week because he liked my joke last week that you didn't like. So, whatever. I'm okay with it.
All right. So, I had blind bought this movie because you had raved about it and you were going to pick it, and Scream Factory was doing like an insane discount for its 5-year anniversary, and this was put out on Blu-ray and DVD by Scream Factory. So I figured, all right, good enough time as any.
Wait, just let me pause you there. That was your first mistake because it's on Netflix for fucking free, dude.
Yeah, but you know what? I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it like Adam hated it. I'm going to watch this again. It might not be on Netflix forever.
It's not a magic movie, but it's a good time.
I know exactly why you like this, by the way, because
it's gooey.
It reminds me so much of Ticks. Mm-hmm. It's literally Ticks with bees.
They're wasps.
Wasps, whatever.
Don't antagonize bees, man.
But yeah, like, it is so gross. Like, even from the opening scene, it's kind of gross. But like, I don't know, the opening scene I kind of dug. I liked it. Reminded me a little bit of like the opening to Men in Black, when you're like flying the bug as it's flying through everything and then something bad happens to it.
You know what I thought the beginning of this was like? It felt like the beginning of this movie, and I didn't notice this the first time I watched it, but there's like this bee that's flying around this like idyllic countryside, and then it gets killed by this killer wasp, whatever. But it felt like the beginning of an episode of Pushing Daisies.
Yeah, no, I could see that. I could absolutely see that. So we're introduced to Julia, who's played by Jessica Cook, and she is fucking gorgeous.
Oh my god. Okay, so that is so funny that you say that, because I have a note that's like, you know what? Everybody at the party is talking about how Julia is so hot. I don't think she's that attractive, and they should have found a girl that was like way more attractive for them to drool over, but wow, there we go. I guess I'm just an idiot.
Well, no, but the flip side of that, so I thought that she was kind of cute when I was watching the movie, right? So I go on IMDb to like find out more about her, and like I think that they maybe uglied her up just a little bit.
I think that, well, okay, here, I don't think you're wrong. I think they planed her up a bit, because she's not a striking looking person. And I think that's I think later on in my notes, it doesn't even matter, but like, I do think that she's attractive. It's not like I wouldn't like see her on the sidewalk and be like, that's a cute girl. But I think that she, at best, she's cute. I don't think that she's fucking hot, you know, like you do, which is no, and it's totally fine, because that's personality Like that's a personal preference. But I looked at her Instagram because I was like, has this girl been in anything else? Actually, I looked up a bunch of people on this to see if they'd been in anything else.
Yeah, she's been like an extra in stuff at the most before this movie.
She hasn't done a whole lot. But she's kind of like Instagram famous. And you know girls that are Instagram famous are just Instagram famous for being attractive. And she's always posting pictures of like smoking weed. Like she lives in California. It's legal there. I don't give a shit. She can do what she wants. But she just seems like a really 20-something girl, like California girl, and she always wears a fuck ton of makeup, and at least in her Instagram pictures, and there's nothing wrong with that either. It's just she's a very specific kind of like Cali girl, and I think that she's cute but not hot. But then when they put a shit ton of makeup on her, like, yeah, she's attractive. But that said, when she gets bloodied up later on in this movie, I understand the appeal.
I think for me, and I'm looking at the pictures on the IMDb page that I just sent you, a big element is her eyes. She's got these beautiful blue eyes, which goes a long way.
Well, and she's got dark hair and blue eyes. Absolutely. That's my type. You know, I'm not gonna say no to that. okay. That picture that you sent me, and for anybody listening, she looks like
an IMDb photo, basically. Okay. Look her up on IMDb.
Yeah. I did see that picture when I went Googling her because I went looking at her IMDb. The thing about that is that she looks like a less plastic Megan Fox. And yes. Actually, you know, I picked Jennifer's Body, and I still love that movie and will defend it till the day I die. I feel so bad for Megan Fox, though, because she was absolutely stunning before all the plastic surgery. Like, she was perfect. And Megan and I talk about this sometimes when Megan Fox comes up. But she just, I feel like she got eaten, like, chewed up and spit out by Hollywood. And I don't know if Jessica Cook is like that. I'm not trying to say anything about her lifestyle or even about Megan Fox's lifestyle. I just feel so bad because if you look at pictures of Megan Fox pre-plastic surgery, she is, like, a knockout. And then she looks kind of plastic now.
Yeah, like, but that's fine. So, so now that we've basically ogled the,
but that's main, what everybody else at the party is doing anyway, so it's all right.
Yeah, so we're at this party, and all of a sudden they don't waste any time. They get right to the bee attack,
which I appreciate. I really appreciate that about this movie, but it actually leads to a huge dragging feeling because this movie is only an hour and 20 minutes long, I believe. But it feels like 2 hours because since they don't have a whole lot of exposition, we get screwed over by the pacing of the beginning. And then they're like, okay, well, where else can we go in this story?
Yeah. And that's why I feel like my notes kind of are a few, like I've got a few random quotes and then just kind of random moments that I'm like, oh, that was cool. Like, it does just like, there's not much in the department of plot line. Like, the wasps attack and people die and some people turn into wasps.
Like, yeah, well, but like, that's a genius concept. It's worked in literally dozens of films and it worked here. Here's my, let me get this out of the way. My biggest problem with this film is the amount of CGI. Because in 2015, like, I don't really think that, like, CGI blood was that popular, but it's, like, everywhere in this movie, and it does not look good.
Some of it didn't bother me, but holy shit, like, the end of this movie, it's out of control. Like, when there's, like, the giant wasp on the front of the truck, and, like, things are on fire, and it's just, like, it's just two human beings standing in the middle of a video game at that point. Like, it is, it is so, it looks so bad.
It's Stay Alive level bad CGI.
Yeah, but then there's other points where, like, when they first just show the giant wasp on the side of the building, say, like, that looks dope. Like, that's what you use the CGI for.
But why did they use CGI for like 3/4 of the blood spray? Which I mean, it's just, that's not a question you can answer. It's just kind of like smacking my forehead. Like, why?
CGI blood makes no sense to me. I understand. So I understand the idea that like squibs are kind of more dangerous than there were. So if you want to use like CGI for kind of like the back of something being blown out, so you're not like strapping explosives on the back of an actor's head, I totally get it.
But don't you think that they could have spent, I don't think that it's squib work. I honestly think that as I was watching the movie and I was getting more and more annoyed with the CGI blood, I think a lot of it is just like spray from below the screen.
And that's what I mean. That's
they could have easily done that. They could have just put some of that. They could have had somebody laying on the ground with some, like two people laying head to head, you know, with a mouthful of fake blood and straws, and just go.
Well, that's, you know? So, like, if you listen to my short little interview with Heidi Cox that I put up as a bonus episode this week, like, she talks about how they, like, reverse-engineered a vacuum for, like, blood splatter on that movie. Like, it was just, like, boom! Like, they just fired it out of the vacuum, and there was your blood splatter against the wall.
But isn't like, that's what we love about the movies that we watch. You know, like all the stuff from the 80s, there was no such thing as CGI blood back in 1987 or whatever. And so people got creative. Like Sam Raimi, you know, I know that we like to rag on him, but it's really because we fucking love his work.
Yeah, and it's because it's hard to really – like if you asked me to name three bad Sam Raimi films, it'd be really fucking tough to do.
You'd have to do research first.
Yeah, but like even like for all of its faults, like even Spider-Man 3, he is the last person on the list of people to blame for Spider-Man 3.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, he did everything he could to make that the best Spider-Man movie possible. And, like, the elements where it feels like a Sam Raimi movie are fantastic. It's the parts that feel like they were forced to be at it that the movie falls apart in.
Yeah. Can I say one thing? Since we're talking about Sam Raimi and Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2 is still probably the most comic book movie I've seen. I haven't seen Spider-Man Homecoming yet, but...
Yeah, no, I think that's safe. I would say a comic book in the good way, because I would argue that despite all of the complaints that people have about these movies, and I'm not saying that they're good movies, Batman Forever and Batman and Robin are very comic book-feeling comic book movies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I honestly think, like, Batman Forever feels like a kid's comic book, whereas Spider-Man feels like a teen's comic book. It felt true to, like, the main ethos of Spider-Man, even though Peter Parker is, like, an adult in those movies and kind of...
And I'll say I also haven't seen Spider-Man Homecoming yet, but it definitely feels like up until Spider-Man Homecoming, which I hear is great, it was the best balance of Peter Parker and Spider-Man that we had. Because, like, my opinion was always that the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies really got Peter Parker down, but Spider-Man didn't quite feel like Spider-Man. Whereas, like, those... The Andrew Garfield ones, like, that wasn't Peter Parker whatsoever, but when he was in the suit and, like, wisecracking and stuff, it really felt like Spider-Man.
I agree. Well, and the thing is that I don't even have a problem with the Sam Raimi Spider-Man. I really only have a problem with the Andrew Garfield Peter Parker, and that's not even his fault. Like, I liked the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
I didn't hate them. I think that there's some issues, especially part two. Like, Paul Giamatti has no reason to be in Amazing Spider-Man part two.
That was the Spider-Man curse, though, where they added too many villains. And, you know, but I feel bad for Andrew Garfield, because he seems like he had a good time with the character, you know, and it's big shoes to fill with Toby, because I mean, it was a huge deal for Spider-Man to get made, and there were three of them even before they started with any of the Amazing Spider-Man stuff and like rebooting it and blah blah blah. But I don't know, I don't love Spider-Man as a character. I don't really love the Spider-Man movies or franchises, but I feel like the guys that played those characters kind of get a bad rap, because, yeah, neither of them were 100% what the character needed, but I feel like they both did a great job. They were good casting overall. But I do think that Tom Holland, at least from what I saw in Avengers Civil
Captain
War.
Yeah, he was perfect. He's perfect.
And they got, like, he's the right age, he's the right build, he's got a great personality for the character, and we've just spent 10 minutes talking about Spider-Man when we're supposed to be talking about a different kind of bug. Wasps.
That's fine. I mean, I don't have that many other notes. I have one thing that I wrote that I feel like you're going to understand what I mean, even though it could apply to a bunch of scenes, but I just wrote, holy shit, that transformation.
Is it the one with the, which one? Is it the cougar?
Where like the, I can't remember any characters' names, but it's the character that Cliff Collins Jr. plays when all of a sudden the arm starts to, like, burst out of his shoulder and you realize that, like...
Oh, he got stung on his, like, his hump? Well, that was...
Yeah.
I was actually really clever writing, in my opinion. I mean, and I know that you don't come watching a movie like Stung. Like, a giant bug movie, you're not expecting cleverness. It's really supposed to beat you over the head with, like, comedy and action and gooiness. But... I thought that was very clever that we had a little bit of exposition of him talking to Julia about how his parents kind of ignored him because he was malformed, you know, like, but then it makes sense. Like, he's like, it was a twin that got absorbed. And so when he gets stung on his hump, it becomes just like the twin that never got to live. And so he gets to fight with the secondary conscious, the hive consciousness. I thought that was really fun. But I have to say about that scene when Kmart Lincoln from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that's Paul's character. I don't think you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but the guy that plays Lincoln on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would have been such a better character, a better casting for this, because he's not likable. Paul's totally not. I mean, I guess that's the point, but he's like totally not likable in this film. He's kind of a douche all over, and he's like kind of a nice guy. He's like friend zone. He's like talking to Lance Henriksen, who is also the best shitty mayor ever. He's so self-centered. I love it. But he and everybody is absolutely worthless at fighting these wasps, which I also think is pretty funny, except for Julia, who eventually redeems herself by like using a hedge clipper, like an electric or a gas-powered hedge clipper to chop the I can't remember the son's name. But she chops him in half. But when Paul is talking to the mayor when they're in the basement drinking, he's like, you know, I thought that she'd be she'd appreciate that I was here, you know, helping out. I'm like, dude, where do you get off? You're mad because you're friend zoned because she doesn't think you're cute just because you have a crush on her? Like, get over it. I'm surprised he didn't have a neck beard and just had shaved his face. He sucked. I was actually disappointed that he was like banging her at the end of this movie, which is actually where my suspension of disbelief broke. And it wasn't the flying cow wasps, which I think was hilarious. But the transformation that I thought you were talking about at first was when the cougar who was hitting on Paul. The bug comes out of her throat basically, and then has her skull like on its claw. I thought that was pretty fun. The CGI is also so bad in comparison to how goddamn awesome their puppetry work is in this movie. There's so much awesome puppet work. And it looks like they had multiple puppets, and they're animatronic as well as probably, you know, manipulated by people. Like, I think that they had like the multiple articulation system in place where people were moving the large pieces, and then they had mechanics to move the smaller stuff, the radio powered mechanics. And that is exactly why I picked this movie, is because I feel like if you strip away the shitty CGI and the kind of lack of a good plot, but the thing is, the plot doesn't even matter in movies like this, so the plot is inconsequential in this as well. But if you strip away the bad CGI, I think that this is a great homage to 80s bug movies, and there were a ton of them. And yes, I mean, Tix is in 93 or whatever, but this movie is a ton of fun. I feel like it would be better watching it in a group of people. I've watched it twice by myself, but you know, I always watch shit by myself. But the part that you were talking about where I can't remember the son's name, he's like trying to feed Paul the grub so that he can become the male wasp to impregnate his mom. Oh my God. That part is hilarious and so, so uncomfortable. He's like, you're going to be my new daddy.
Yeah. This movie is fucking ridiculous. I don't want to watch it again. Oh,
I just looked at my notes for the first time. The shoulder wasp, it's an homage to Basket Case. That's why you love it.
Pretty much. Yep. That checks out. Story checks out there. Stay tuned for more Basket Case talking.
Yeah.
I definitely like feel like this is a movie that I'm going to make more people watch. It's one of those things that I'm definitely going to subject people to in the future. And I'm okay with that.
I feel like there's nothing wrong with that. It's not like making people watch, I don't know, what kind of shit do you make? Like, it's not like making people watch Freaked.
Hey.
I like Freaked, but I feel like it's got a higher bar to entry than Stung.
I think, okay, so what you're saying is that Stung can be like the entry gate that builds eventually to Freaked. You can't start people off on Freaked.
Yes, exactly. Okay, yeah, Freaked is like intermediate level, and Stung is definitely an entry level horror movie. It's gross, but it's like, I really think that the grossest part is when that like gigantic grub is being pushed in Paul's face because of the implications.
But yeah, I mean, there's a couple good quotes in there. I'm a gynecologist, for Christ's sake. And do you want to make out was another one that made me laugh out loud when the two are stuck in the car. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a good, fun movie, but not something that I think I would watch repeatedly, but definitely would enjoy watching once in a while with some random friends.
Yeah, and I think I could get one more watch out of this and then take 5 years off. You know, it's I feel like if you were to make a compilation of like the intros, like, or not the intro scene, but the garden party scene where people are getting fucking killed and turning into bugs, and then maybe the part with the giant like the baby slug or whatever it is that he wants him to eat. If you just did that into like a 20-minute thing, I could watch that yearly because those are awesome. But the pacing is just kind of excruciating otherwise.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. So unless you have anything else to talk about.
No, I'm good. I have something I want to tell you about. I mean, like I have a what have you watched for you though.
Set a course. For the Unstoppable Jack and Jen podcasting the impossible.
Star Trek Voyager being the material. Wine is the vehicle, just like milk for your cereal.
Here we go, blasting to the Delta Quadrant. Uncharted territory, but we're on it.
So pour me another glass of Cabernet, cause it pairs well with different parts of the galaxy. Never in my life was a crew so brave.
Never was a time that I lacked rosé.
But you learn something new each and every day.
To explore new things is a Starfleet way.
Podcast hailing from the Geekscape Nation. Talking Star Trek with the wine persuasion.
So you wanna live long and prosper fine, then you better tune in to Seven of Wine.
And this is Seven of Wine, where we review an episode of Star Trek Voyager and a bottle of wine at the same time.
All right, then.
Do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. Do you think you got a good ender?
Maybe. I mean, who knows? Without Adam here to rip apart all of our conversation pieces, then I have no idea.
That's true. All right, so what I have to talk about is two things. Someone had actually mentioned this in the Facebook chat and Facebook page, and it reminded me that I'd never brought it up. But the movie The Unholy, I got that through Scream Factory a while ago as a review copy. Or no, not Scream Factory. This one was from Vestron Video. But it's nothing that we would ever discuss on the podcast. It's a little, as crazy as it is, and like the last like 10 minutes has one of the most terrible rubber monster.
Wait, is the Unholy the one where it's like an ugly hot demon or something like that?
Yeah,
I don't know how to explain it otherwise, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a an image that I can hold on to for whenever this episode comes out. But it looks like a weird, like, ghoulie, but it's got boobs.
Yep, that's the one. I haven't seen the whole thing, but I have seen that last scene that you're talking about.
Yeah, the movie itself is really cool and, like, really well-paced, and it's a good, like, creepy, like, satanic, demonic-type horror film. And then the rubber monster thing pops up, and it's a little rough.
Oh, no! I'm sorry. This movie is on my 8-pack. I've seen this movie. It's got the priest and, yeah, dude, this movie is ridiculous. Yeah, I'd never pick it for the podcast just because Adam would be pretty inconsolable. But
well, it's a little long. It drags.
Yeah. It really drags.
But when it works fucking beautifully. But it mostly drags. But yeah, no, the Unholy is a really fun movie. I definitely recommend it. If you can sit through a few of the points when it drags, you get super rewarded for sticking through it. And I want to give a shout out to a podcast that I found out about when I was in San Diego Comic-Con. I threw it up on the Facebook page earlier this week, but Fright School is so much fun. It's so charming. That's the only word I can come up with. It's a charming podcast. I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen to it yet, Scott, but it's two dudes in San Diego. Not that it matters that much, but I think it's part of the charm is that they're both gay, which gives a very interesting perspective to things. They get very insightful in the beginning of the episodes, referencing some of the horror stuff that they watched recently. So it's a lot of, like, what happened in American Horror Story, or they'll talk a little bit about RuPaul's Drag Race and stuff like that. So it's that I think adds a cool element to it. But basically, the one dude's a huge horror movie buff. The other guy's never watched horror movies before, so they sit down, and the friend who loves horror movies bought a college textbook on horror movies, like that you would teach a class of on horror with, and built a curriculum to teach his friend about horror films. So, like, episode 1 is about Dracula, episode 2 is about Psycho, and, you know, Night of Living Dead, and then eventually they get there. Like, right now I'm at Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, they just go in chronological order of the films that were released, and they use it as jumping off points. So, like, use Dracula to talk about the history of vampires, and use, you know, The Thing from Another World to talk about alien movies and stuff like that. So it's really kind of cool. It's insightful. It's also fun just hearing, like, one person who loves this stuff, and then, like, someone who really has never watched it and has been sheltered from it, and their different opinions. It's a really cool podcast. So I can't.
It's on my list of things to do.
Yeah, and I mean, it's only like 17 episodes. They literally do 16 weeks of class. I haven't listened to the final yet, but there's the final girls episode, and then they'll be back for another class very soon. There is a chance that they might have a guest substitute teacher, possibly discussing, I don't know, Sleepaway Camp. And so keep listening for that. But yeah, that's the two things that I really – actually, you know what? I'll throw one more thing in here because I don't feel like talking about this when Adam's on the podcast. Because
he's going to listen to this and be so ejected. He's going to be like, guys.
Well, no. There's a bunch of stuff that's on Netflix that most of us have watched and that we can discuss, and I want to save him for one of those two discussions. But this one is I sat down and I watched The Keepers, and, like, amazingly well-made docuseries that just leaves you feeling so distraught and broken by the end of it.
Yeah, Megan watched that shit, and she was, like, screaming at the TV/computer whenever she was watching it. And she was like, you need to watch this. I was like, honey, I was Catholic for like most of my, I was Catholic for 19 years. I already know all this.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because my mom had watched it before I did. Like, she just watched it on a whim because she was told to check it out, and she was raised Catholic. And then I was watching it, and she came in during one of the episodes, like, I was watching in the living room, and she just started, like, as soon as, like, one person showed up on camera, she's like, oh, that liar, they're such a liar. Like, she gets, like, so fired up and angry about these people. And it was awesome seeing how, like, my mom was as equally enraged by the film as I was. Or the documentary as I was. So I definitely think that it's worth watching. This isn't a spoiler, but it's something that you should have fair warning on because it caused a bit of a debate at work where my one coworker was complaining that he hated it because there was no, like, big revelation, like with Making a Murder and a lot of those other docuseries. And I said, yeah, but that's the reality. Like, to me, I think it's more interesting and kind of sadder, because the reality is that these people are probably going to get away with it, and they're always going to be able to get away with it. And that's what's important about it, is making us aware that it's happening. Anyway, sorry, that's my long rant. I ended on too serious of a note. So pick us up, Scotty boy.
All right. Well, so, and you can cut this if necessary. Did I talk about Castlevania yet?
No. Is Castlevania good?
Okay. So, I watched it, and it's 4 fucking episodes. Like, it's such a tease. Like, there's no point. It's great. It took me a minute to get into it. It basically feels like 4 episodes of Metalocalypse, but without the jokes. Like, you ever watch Metalocalypse with, like, Death Clock?
So, I've never watched Metalocalypse, but our booth was right next to the head animator of Metalocalypse, so I got to talk to him for an entire week at San Diego.
Oh, okay. All right, well...
I'm familiar with it, though. I know who they are and all that.
Yeah, you just need to know, like, the concept. And there, so it's them in the studio interspersed with, when they play out at shows, it's like fucking mayhem. And people die, and there's just, like, gratuitous violence. Like, comically gratuitous violence. That's exactly what Castlevania is without the jokes. Castlevania is Dracula's wife is burnt at the stake as a witch by this kind of corrupt priest. And then Dracula is like, fuck it, you're all gonna die. And he unleashes this interdimensional portal from hell. And children are dying, babies are getting dismembered, people's eyes are getting gouged out, people are screaming everywhere. There are rivers, literally rivers of blood in this town. It's incredible. I mean, it's animated, but it's still damn cool. I don't love the fact that everybody's face looks like an anime character, which felt like it was kind of a, hey, let's co-opt the obsession with anime and kind of like bring that into Castlevania, because Castlevania, I mean, I guess later Castlevanias, like the DS, the Nintendo DS ones and stuff like that, have a much stronger like anime and Jap animation kind of like, is that a Japanese animation? Jap animation? Is that a thing? Anyway,
yeah.
They have much a stronger slant than the original stuff, which was a lot more classic, in my opinion. And I never played those games. I only played the ones on Nintendo and Super Nintendo. So I guess in like the grand scheme, it feels right. But for me, it's not something I liked, but it's not enough of a detractor for me to be like, don't watch Castlevania. But it's only 4 episodes, and every episode is 20 minutes long. And it felt like a third of a season. Like, they didn't even do anything. It's just like they got to basically what would be the end of like the second episode of a real TV show, and I was like, okay, well, where's the rest of it? I actually fell asleep at the end of the 4th episode 3 nights in a row, and I was like, whoa, how many episodes did I miss? Fucking none, apparently, because I kept going back like, okay, I missed, okay, 5 minutes of the last episode, because there are only 4 episodes. But I really like it. I'm looking forward to seeing more, but I really wish that they would have put out an entire season of it, or at least had some sort of conclusion, because it made no sense for them to put out 4 episodes. It felt like very unfinished. It felt rushed.
Four episodes of 22 minutes, you might as well just put out a Castlevania movie. Like,
yeah, but the thing is that there wasn't even enough time for them to, or there wasn't even enough character development for them to have there be like a good stopping point at 4 episodes of 20 minutes. It's just weird. In any case, it was fun. I enjoyed watching it. I'll probably rewatch it when they put out the next section. No biggie. Also on Netflix, and somewhat controversial, apparently, is XX, the all-female anthology horror that came out, I want to say, in January or February.
Yeah. So I feel like there was discussion on our Facebook page about how it was complete garbage.
Right. All those people are idiots. well, no, they're not idiots. I think that the expectations were way too high for that film. Anthologies, as a rule, are weak. The only one, in my opinion, really, that's ever done it the way I want to see it is Trick or Treat. That's, yeah. I mean, I can't think of another anthology that fits the point of having all those movies happen in a town on the same night, have a good wraparound story. It's smart, it's funny, it's brutal, it's clever. You know, like, it's dark, but also there are kids kind of, like, doing the Goonies slash Monster Squad type shit in Trick or Treat. XX has big shoes to fill because I feel like people were expecting it to be as good as Trick or Treat. It was never going to be that good. I think that individually, there were some really strong pieces. The Box is actually one of the most unsettling shorts I think I may have ever seen. And I don't talk about this a lot, but I've struggled with my weight and eating enough and my, like, you know, like mental anxiety, things like that, for my entire life. And I'll be that way forever. Like I take medication for it and it's helpful, but watching The Box was the most tense short. You'll have to watch it to understand. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. It's kind of hard to actually spoil it because I think that people's main criticism of it is that it's not enough happens in it, but actually that's what's so unsettling about it. It's just so dark and so helpless and hopeless. I can see why a woman would write it as, like, I don't know if the woman who wrote it and directed it is a mother. I don't know if she has gone through any sort of anxiety about food or eating disorder or anything like that. But it's really dark. I can understand why people didn't like some of the other shorts, but I understood the point of all of them, and I thought that they were all very strong. Together, I think that the film is less, it's weaker together than they are individually, and I think that that's the big problem. But I would put it on par with VHS 2, which I like better than VHS 1. So yeah, there's that.
I think that's the common consensus with VHS 2, is that of that franchise, it's definitely the best one that they made.
Well, and the big problem with, well, I think that my biggest problem with VHS 2 is that it's so much better than VHS 1 strictly because of the cult story. It's just that's the best thing that they've done. It's one of the best shorts since Trick or Treat. So, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, like, okay, VHS 1 overall was a better film when VHS 2 has such a powerful, such a well-done short within it.
Yeah. I would, as far as, like, anthology films, while I agree that Trick or Treat's probably, like, the last one that really fucking knocked it out of the park and showed what you could do with a good anthology, I still, and I've said this time and time again, and I will stress it over and over again, that Tales from the Hood, despite its absurd name and cover, is the best anthology film that has ever been made. And I'm including Trick or Treat in there. I'm including Creepshow 1 in there. It is so smart. It's got such a good wraparound story. It's got genuinely scary stories, which is super fucking hard to pull off. And it actually has a message. Like, it has a moralistic message hidden inside of it. Like, the only way I can describe it is, like, think the movie Get Out, but think 4 or 5 miniature versions of Get Out mixed into one horror film, where it's just like, here's the Get Out version of a zombie movie. Here's the Get Out version of, like, a killer doll movie. Here's the Get Out version of, like, a Monster in the Closet story. And they just build all of these, like, they take all these different horror tropes and they put a very, like, culturally aware, social-minded twist on it, and it makes it all the more horrific. But also fun. Like, it's that's the craziest part, is when you're able to do something that's, like, smart and socially aware, but also really, really fun to watch. Like, I love watching Tales from the Hood. It's not like, oh man, this is a struggle, I gotta sit through this because it's so depressing. Like, I have a good time, I laugh, the kills are rewarding, but I also acknowledge, like, man, this movie's saying some shit. Like,
yeah, and you know I love me some socially conscious horror. I've been putting off Tales from the Hood for so long because it's not readily available. It hasn't come up on Netflix or Shudder for me to watch, so it's been low on my priority list. But I based on that, I will absolutely watch it. I'll try and watch it before our next episode so that I can give you my thoughts.
All right, sounds good. But yeah, like when Scream Factory announced that they had put it out on Blu-ray, that was like that was some of the biggest news in a while, because that was one that, like you said, just not readily available. The DVD was like, if you listen to the bonus episode, we brought this up when I was talking to Ben from Sci-Fi, but like the previously owned DVDs were going for like $40-$50. Like it was,
damn,
it was like the hot ticket. Everyone wanted to see this movie and you just couldn't own it. I think that's it. I think that's all we have to say. We'll be back next week with Adam. But this was Stung from 2015. We didn't want to leave you guys hanging with like another retroactive episode or stuff like that. So I guess we're always good at showing the wizard behind the curtain. Basically, when I went to California, we kind of fell really behind on being able to back catalog the shows, and we're trying to get ourselves back into the forefront. So give us a little bit of time. We're probably going to have like one of the more grueling recording schedules over the next like 2 or 3 weeks, but ideally it'll be so we can get a good head start into the end of this year for a big, you know, award-winning gold medal finish in December.
A golden shower medal finish.
Yes, because we're getting a new version of Rawhead Rex on Blu-ray.
Yeah!
So don't forget that you can always check us out at hmnpodcast.com, built by Stephen Bay, one of the most incredible people that we have ever been blessed to have listened to our podcast. I will continue to blow Stephen any chance I get, because that dude does so many good things for us.
It really helps that he's attractive, too.
Crazy attractive. And we love all of the fans out there. So as much as you should be checking out hmnpodcast.com, even more so, you should be going on Facebook and searching Horror Movie Night Podcast and finding the Facebook page where there's lots of good chatter. You will notice, if you haven't joined the group yet, that when you go to join the group, there will be a question asking how you found us. Just answer the question. It doesn't have to be a long, elaborate thing. It's just a way to help us keep people out who are just kind of rolling in to like sell sunglasses and random ass shit. So
you're kind of suspect if you're a member of 3,500 groups on Facebook and you don't speak English. So we're kind of wary of you guys.
Yeah, and you joined Facebook 3 hours ago.
yeah. I mean, it's really for the benefit of everybody that's not just us, because it's minimal effort for us to ban assholes, but for the people that come on the page and put their time into reading what we have to say, listening to our podcast, talking about horror, things that they're watching, their thoughts on horror in general, like, it's going to get lost in the din if we don't keep ourselves clean, you know, keep our page clean. So it's not for us as much as it's for the people, the listeners, and we just want everybody to be able to have a good time and not be like, well, there's more bullshit coming up on the HMN Facebook page. I don't want to follow that anymore.
Yeah, and one last thing while we're talking about that is I think that we've never actually addressed it on the podcast, so I want to address it now. If you're curious about posting your stuff on the Facebook wall, I stick by this simple rule. Anybody who's actively participating in conversations is free to post. You know what I mean? Like, I think that people get afraid to post, and then other people just kind of post whenever. There's a guy, Tony, who is super active in that Facebook page all the time. He posted a short story. You should absolutely read it. And that's cool. Like, that's great. And I want to see people's writing. I want to see stuff like that. But I don't want you to just turn our Facebook wall into a spot to share your shit without actually commenting and joining in the other discussions, because that's not fair to anybody. But we've been preaching for a while. We will be back next week with another movie, yet another film that has a crazy-ass transformation scene in it. So
almost like we planned it.
Almost like we did, although I do have a note that, like, we've had a ton of movies with crazy-ass trans transformation scenes like back to back to back to back.
And a oh shit. Sorry.
I almost didn't have to do any editing on this episode.
Well, at least it's at the end. All right. This is your captain signing off.
Yeah, I'm going to finish the sentence you were going to say.
Fuck it. No.